It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Hey everyone, welcome back to a new episode of Inside China Tech. I am Zhen Su, a technology reporter with the South China Morning Post. So if you don't know, next week the MWC is happening in Barcelona, Spain. That is the Mobile World Congress, and it is the largest industry event for anything and everything to do with mobile. Today I have with me Brian Ma, who is the Vice President of Client Devices Research at IDC Asia Pacific. So if you don't know, Brian is a massive phone geek. He knows everything and anything there is to know about smartphone brands. So today we've had a very intense conversation about foldables, about 5G, about how Chinese smartphone brands managed to climb their way to the top to become some of the world's largest smartphone suppliers. And yeah, Brian will be headed to Andalusia next week, so he has a lot to share about what he's expecting to see, what are the exciting technology that all these phone companies are prepared to release. So yeah, let's get into it. Tell us, Brian, what can we expect from Chinese phone brands this year at the MWC in Spain?
Sure. And I might even argue that what I'll offer is not unique to just the Chinese phone brands. You'll see others as well. But obviously, we'll hear a lot around 5G. We'll also hear a lot around foldables. And as usual, it's almost like an ongoing thing every year, or at least in the past few years, there's always a lot of emphasis on photography and different ways to approach that. We will probably hear quite a bit about how AI fits into that, particularly around photography as well. And maybe even some stuff around, let's say, gaming phones here and there. But yeah, I think it's definitely, there's not going to be any shortage of interesting things going on. I think the industry's been worried a lot about, oh, has all the innovation left the smartphone space? The market has flattened out, which is true. I mean, the market contracted 3% last year. But I would argue there isn't any shortage of innovation. I think the industry still really is excited. They're making a lot of investments into those various areas that I mentioned. And in particular this year, I think we'll hear a lot about 5G and foldables in particular. I mean, you just look at what Samsung had launched last night with their foldables. You look at, you know, Xiaomi's been teasing some stuff. In fact, I think that may be something, you know, they of course haven't confirmed anything, but they've got a global launch coming up at MWC, the day before MWC, which presumably will be a global launch of the Mi 9 that they launched in China just a few days ago. But I won't be surprised if they also do some kind of a preview, in-person preview of their foldable, right? They've already kind of leaked some of it in social media a few weeks ago. It will be interesting to see if they've got a device that they can show in person in Barcelona. In fact, it's this weekend, this coming Sunday, they'll be doing their launch.
So Ryan, you've talked a lot about foldables. And what exactly is a foldable and why is that so significant?
Sure. So, you know, and it's funny because I've mentioned foldables so many times to customers and folks in the industry over the past few weeks. And the number of responses that I got saying, hey, you know what? We've had foldables for a long time. They're called flip phones, right? They're those old school phones or those old Nokia communicators. To be clear, we're not talking about that from a foldable perspective. The big difference is that we're talking about a foldable screen, right? One entire contiguous screen that folds in half. And so what you then get is basically a tablet-sized screen that could fold in half and be just as pocketable as your existing phone today. That's basically what everyone's kind of chasing after. It's this great idea, right? Suddenly I can have this gigantic screen without having to carry a gigantic screen in my pocket. And in theory, that can change things quite a bit, right? What else can you do with a much larger screen, whether it's around videos, around maps, whatever other applications it may be? Does it potentially even impact, you know, there's probably a direct impact on the tablet market. Could it potentially even impact the PC market? How does this potentially change the way we do things beyond just the regular portrait size, you know, five or six inch portrait mode screens that we're used to today? It opens up a different way with which we would interact with our devices, and could potentially be, you know, I won't be surprised if there's some new interesting usage models or different ways that people end up using devices now that you can suddenly expand this large type of screen.
So who really is leading the charge for this foldable sort of movement?
Of the big names, obviously Samsung is the big one that we just saw last night, right? And finally, you had a big, large-scale, credible company with, you know, a lot of engineering and design chops as well as manufacturing chops. And not to mention component background, right? A lot of this comes from their display division as well, too. So a lot of it's coming from them. But of course, prior to Samsung, there was a small company out of China called Royole, R-O-Y-O-L-E, that's been showing a product for the past few months and was showing it at CES. The design is a bit different. The screen is on the outside rather than on the inside, but they've had that there, and they will be at MWC this year, so it'll be good to take a look at that as well, too. Xiaomi has been hinting at some as well. They've shown on social media one that actually has two folds, which is kind of interesting. It's kind of like a trifold wallet kind of a design. Lenovo has been, actually for a few years now, a good number of years ago, Lenovo had a Tech World conference. They had their own basically a showcase event where they showcased all the various technologies that they had, one of which was actually a foldable phone. They never brought it to production, and in theory, rumors are they're still working on something. But Lenovo's actually been working on this for a while. Rumor is Huawei may have something that they'll be showing off in Barcelona this weekend as well, too. If you take a look at the, you know, the invitation that they've sent out for their event, it suggests they may be showing something there. And I won't be surprised if we see quite a few others as well, too. I mean, I think, like I said, the idea of a foldable phone, and in fact, for that matter, foldable screens actually have been around for a while. It's just that nobody's actually, we're finally reaching that stage where OEMs, where the system builders themselves have finally built into a product that they feel they're ready to release. And so we're finally at that year where we could start moving ahead with this. Now, having said that, I think it's also important to tame our expectations on where this market can go, right? I think a lot of people were certainly dazzled by what Samsung showed last night. And even if it costs a very high amount, there's going to be early adopters that will buy it. But I think there's still a lot that needs to be overcome here, right? When you look at that foldable phones, there's several challenges in these very early days that still need to be addressed. The obvious stuff is from the hardware side. What is the production yield like? What is reliability of that hinge when you keep folding it back and forth? What's the battery life going to be like now that you suddenly have this much bigger, gigantic screen that you've got to power? Is there a little crease in between as well, too? Does that make a difference? And of course, that high price tag, right, which will eventually come down in prices in time, right? I think a lot of reactions to the Samsung news last night was, oh, this is a $2,000 product. Who's going to spend $2,000 on a phone? It's a valid comment, but keep in mind that notebooks just, you know, a little over a decade ago used to cost $2,000 as well, right? And so you'll have the early adopters. The component prices will naturally come down as the industry scales over time. It could take 5-10 years before we get there, but they'll come down. But I think the other thing that a lot of folks tend to overlook when we think about foldables is looking beyond just the hardware problems. I think one of the biggest challenges is actually from a software perspective, particularly apps. Right. If you think about most apps today, they are written for a portrait mode 5 or 6 inch screen, not necessarily a tablet size landscape, large size screen. In fact, if you think about Android tablets, they've been struggling for a very long time. And one big reason for that is because there haven't really been that many Android apps that are optimized for a landscape, or rather for a tablet size screen, I should say. So how easy will it be for Google and the rest of the ecosystem providers to motivate the developers to write to the screen? Now, I think the good thing is the product itself that Samsung announced last night was so interesting that you will get app developers interested. I think you are going to see some folks writing and thinking about how they can leverage that additional real estate. Even Samsung announced last night, they already had a number of key applications already becoming more optimized for the screen, including WhatsApp and other ones. So we're already starting to get the ball moving on this. But again, this kind of ecosystem change doesn't happen overnight. This is something that could take a number of years before it really settles down. So I guess the point that I'm making here is that, you know, as cool as the foldable may be, I think, and as much as they'll probably get quite a bit of attention in the upcoming years, I don't expect it to be a mass market product in the next few years, or at least next 1 or 2 years yet. This is something that takes time to settle. It is something that will be an early adopter, you know, a gadget geek, if you will, or at least a developer kind of a tool. It'll be a developer platform for a while. We need to kind of get this ecosystem moving, but at least the first horses are out of the gate, if you will. We just need to give it time to let this settle in.
Okay, I guess the question is, will this foldable screen prove to be a game changer in terms of, say, for the world's top smartphone brands? Like, as we know right now, like Samsung is number one, and like subsequently a lot of that's like Huawei, Oppo, Xiaomi. Will this sort of, like, say, Samsung's innovation, if they're clearly right now super confident, like, you know, they've already presented a product, will this sort of switch things up in terms of global smartphone shipments or rankings? Is there an impact on that?
Short-term, no. Long-term, potentially, yes. So short-term, it ties to that earlier comment I made, right? This is not something that happens overnight. So it's not going to change the fortunes of these companies overnight. But what does get interesting is how the industry as a whole may potentially change. And is there an early mover advantage in this, right? I think what's interesting about this space is even these hardware designs, it's still not clear what is the optimal way to do it. Samsung did one that folds like a book where the screen is on the inside. Royal did one that's on the outside. There's some that might actually pivot on the horizontal axis rather than vertical axis. Do you do multiple screens? And so if you think about that, software developers have to, you know, there's a lot of different configurations they need to think about here. And that's not what they want to do because they can't get any scale out of that, right? So is there an early, is there a particular design that works best for this? No one knows the answer to that yet. But if there is one that gets settled in early as that, okay, this is the established standard, and then everyone starts writing applications for that, then that helps to potentially cement a particular vendor's position. Who is that going to be? It's way too early to tell. But I would say that I think Samsung's got they're on the right path here. I think that inside book fold with the dual outside screen seems to make a lot of practical sense, but we'll see if that really turns out to be the right way to use it.
So Samsung's still number one right now, but, you know, like maybe as, say, like 10 years ago, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, these were not really dominated by Chinese brands. Right now in the top five, we have companies like Huawei and Oppo and Xiaomi. And my question really is how did these Chinese phone brands basically climb their way to the top, like before Chinese phone brands were labeled as copycats, like, and arguably they might still be labeled that. I think some people often say Xiaomi is a big copycat of Apple, but basically how did they claw their way to the top?
Sure. And actually, just to that point first about being a copycat, yeah, I would say even just a day or two ago, I saw, I think, a few pieces criticizing Xiaomi for copying Apple's wallpaper or something like that. So that, unfortunately, I think a lot of the phone brands are tainted with that reputation, and that's not an easy reputation to overcome. There are good examples of those that have turned around their perception, at least in certain markets. I think Huawei is probably one of the best examples of that, particularly in its home market of China. A good number of years ago, even as a consumer in China, One would be embarrassed to carry a Huawei phone. It was considered to be a low-end, poor-quality product. But Huawei has really turned its image around in China. They've been a lot of the messaging that has resonated with buyers there has been about their technical superiority of their products, right? A few years ago, it was about antenna, signal strength, reception. Let's say when you're in the basement parking lot of a high-rise building, if you put an iPhone right next to a Huawei phone, you get better signal reception out of the Huawei device. And that message really resonated with a lot of buyers. And then, you know, fast forward a bit, you get things like, you know, Huawei's talking about multiple camera lenses. You get things like Huawei recently, what they're doing is something they're calling GPU Turbo, which is a predictive way of drawing triangles for games, for mobile games. And that messaging has really worked out well for Huawei, such that today, those same consumers that would have been embarrassed to have that Huawei phone a few years ago are now very proud to have that Huawei phone because it's perceived to be technologically superior. Now, obviously, recent nationalism, or I should say trade tensions around the world, help fuel a bit of nationalism that in turn works out very well for Huawei too. But nonetheless, another big part of this is also simply, another big part of that pride, like I mentioned, is simply the perception that Huawei has that technological superiority in some of these areas that make it one of the best phones out there. And what do you know, by the way? You know, while Apple is struggling in China with these very high price points and incidentally being perceived as products that, hey, you know what, really aren't that different in the end, who's there to kind of pick up the scraps and all that? Huawei happens to land right there where, you know, they've got a product that happens to be just a little cheaper than the iPhone. It's not at that $1,000 price point. It's at that $700 price point. It also happens to have the perception of being, you know, having a lot of technical advantages or superiorities. And by the way, yeah, there's a bit of nationalism fueling that too. So that all helps to fuel Huawei's, you know, solid ground, I guess, in China. Now, I think when we start looking overseas then, right, I think that's also why you'll see more and more of that messaging from Huawei, even as it goes overseas to markets like Western Europe. That's why they talk a lot about these multiple camera lenses, or, you know, I think a lot of stuff they've been doing recently was, oh, we were the first with a seven nanometer AI enabled silicon or chip within our phone. So they're increasingly relying more and more on that kind of messaging. And it's not just Huawei either, right? If you look at Oppo, if you look at Xiaomi, of course, was one of the first with the bezel-less phone when they did the Mi Mix. Oppo, for instance, one of the things that they did at MWC 2 years ago was they showed an optical zoom lens using a kind of a periscope design, if you will. And the rumor is, by this weekend, they will be showing something that hopefully will be more production ready. I think they just leaked on social media a day or two ago, you know, how they could do a 10 times optical zoom rather than a digital zoom that most cameras do. So there's quite a bit of innovation going on here. And I guess the shorter answer to your original question, in a very long-winded way, was that a lot of it does come down to engineering chops. These guys are very, very aggressive in engineering and design. Arguably, that's kind of why Samsung's mantra that to me was so significant, because Samsung kind of lost that edge, you could argue. A lot of these Chinese vendors were faster than Samsung in getting to a lot of these various areas, including multiple camera lenses and you know, bezel-like or nearly bezel-free designs and that kind of thing. Last night was finally Samsung's chance to say to the global stage, you know what? Hey, we've got innovation too. Check out this foldable phone. Check out the stuff we're doing in cameras as well too, and that kind of thing. So I think it'll be interesting to see that there's going to be a lot of chest thumping, if you will, about, look, this is how fast I was to this particular technology. This is how great our products are. Because at least in the case of some of these vendors like Huawei, they've been able to monetize on that. It's worked out well in their messaging for them in their home market. And even for other guys like Oppo and Vivo and these other guys, you know, as much as they may be more of a mid-range or low-end play, these guys are able to still deliver innovation, if you will, at a affordable price point. And that's the other thing that's been disruptive to the likes of Apple and Samsung. You've got these mid-range players coming in at $300, $400, $500 or in many cases less than that, and being able to deliver nearly flagship-like features at significantly lower prices. And that's one of the things that keeps Samsung awake at night. And it's one of the things that they're going to continue to have to, one of the challenges they're going to continue to have to face in the upcoming years.
So it sounds to me that the Chinese smartphone brands basically have almost every segment of the market covered. You have brands that cover, you know, maybe something more low-end where they price themselves, you know, to be affordable, the value for money. You have brands like Huawei who also fill the mid to high-end. And so together, no matter which kind of market they enter, whether it's India, whether it's Europe, that Chinese smartphone brands will always have a market in those regions.
Yeah, and they're replicating, if you will. I put air quotes around that word replicating. They're, as you know, a lot of these Chinese phone brands, they're spinning off little sub-brands, right? Oppo has spun off a brand called Realme. Xiaomi spun off its Redmi brand, but they've also got Poco, which they created. Vivo just recently released a brand called iQOO, if that's even the right way to pronounce it, I-Q-O-O. And a lot of that is, to kind of your point, they can target different market segments using these brands, right? If a brand is perceived for a particular market segment that they can't shake, well, hey, here's another brand that they can also address by creating a different perception. It's kind of like a Lexus and Toyota analogy, right? You can use a different brand to target a different market segment.
Where exactly is the growth coming from for these Chinese companies? Is it domestic or is it in more, say, emerging markets, say, Southeast Asia?
It's both. Okay, sorry, let me restate that. I think when they initially were on the rise, obviously a lot of that was in China, and that's when the China market was really surging along. But as we all know, the China market has flattened itself out as well, too. In fact, it's contracted, right? So these guys are naturally looking overseas for their opportunities. India was the most obvious target that they were going after, and many of them went in there quite early, including the likes of Xiaomi in particular, who's now the number one vendor there, as well as guys like OnePlus and so forth. And when you look at a market like India, the great thing was about the market is we're seeing double-digit growth rates there, right? Compared to a global smartphone market that's contracting by single digits, you've got double-digit growth rates in India. Now, disclaimer on that, of course, is that the average selling price in India is much more different than on a global basis. So in dollar terms, that growth isn't as high, but at least in unit terms, it's much higher. So you see a lot of more growth that's being propelled in these emerging markets. And that's one thing that, you know, most of these vendors are relying on, particularly Xiaomi, of course, but Oppo and then to a lesser degree, Vivo.
Is it that for brands like Apple and Samsung? I mean, clearly Apple has abandoned all, you know, they're clearly going for the high-end market now with their pricing for their new iPhones and Samsung. Is there this very clear marked difference in strategy between Chinese smartphone makers and like companies like Apple and Samsung?
Yeah, I would say that comment applies more so to Apple than Samsung. Samsung's got quite a bit of breadth. They'll go down to that low. And in fact, they've recently been launching some online-only brands, the M series, I should say, or product lines, I should say, not brands. They've got the M series that sells only online in markets like India, specifically to go after a lot of the Chinese brands that have been coming in at that mid-range. But yeah, I mean, sorry, let me back up a second to your question. I think, Apple and Samsung, you could argue, are more traditional in their approach in the market. A lot of above-the-line advertising, traditional distribution models, beyond just the product positioning, right? I think what makes some of these Chinese vendors interesting is the way that they disrupt. And by the way, I know that's an overused term, but they, in many cases, some of these vendors are quite disruptive in the way they approach the market. And I'll use Xiaomi and Oppo as examples here. So Xiaomi obviously is one that kind of grew up online initially, at least, but a lot of what they did that was quite different from what the big brands did was their user engagement model. They created a huge cult following of, they call them Mi fans, right? They created this huge cult following of young tech savvy users that, and with little micro celebrities, if you will, within the company, right? You know, the people like the CEO Lei Jing, who they will pay money for tickets to go to a product launch event, right? As much as people want to go to Apple launch events, they don't pay money to go there, but people pay money to go to a Xiaomi launch event, right? And so they've been able to cultivate a you know, quite a bit of an interesting user engagement model. They get a lot of user feedback through online forums, and that in turn drives some of their product designs. And users feel like they make a difference because they suggested, hey, Xiaomi, why don't you build this feature? And then a few months later, suddenly it comes down as a firmware upgrade, right? So they feel that kind of close level of engagement. OnePlus is even more specific when they do that, by the way. They target a very tech-savvy user. But Xiaomi has been quite disruptive in that sense in terms of the way they approach marketing. Now, having said that, obviously they've had to adjust a bit as they've grown. They do more offline stuff now. You know, as they've grown more scale, they're obviously doing a bit more advertising as well too. But nonetheless, that was quite unique about Xiaomi. Now, Oppo is another really interesting example, not so much in the way that they engage users, but the way that they engage distribution, right? And what I mean by that is they've, in many markets, particularly in developing markets, they disintermediate the channel. That they tend to skip a lot of the big traditional retailers, and or sorry, distributors, I should say, and go straight to the final tier retailers. And the way that they engage is quite different in terms of they require significant amounts of volume commitments. They, in many cases, don't extend credit. They require them to pay in cash, and they have their own Oppo employee promoters that work with these retailers. That is quite disruptive as well too, which has really resulted in a lot of Oppo signage. That's the other big thing that that works well in these developing markets. These huge Oppo signs everywhere you go. That name just gets plastered in the minds of consumers. And you know, even as we do mystery shopper kind of research, you know, just walking to a retail store, we say, hey, we want to buy this Samsung phone. The store promoter says, no, don't buy that. Buy this Oppo one. And it's part of it's also because he's getting good, he or she is getting good incentives from Oppo because of the way that Oppo has structured its channels. It's got the margins where they can move a lot of that over to the channels and give them incentives. So it's quite interesting in the way that Xiaomi and Oppo have kind of come in here and disrupted things. As much as Samsung has tried to react in markets like India and say, oh, well, we can sell online too. But the problem is then they start to alienate or risk alienation of their traditional online channel, offline channels and distributors. And so that's what makes it a bit more of a challenge for some of the more traditional incumbents to react to that. So anyway, I guess, like I said, these Chinese vendors, as their strategy as they go to market, because they can come in with a clean slate, if you will, it's been quite fascinating to see the different approaches they've been taking as they go to market.
And how exactly are consumers perceiving these Chinese smartphone brands as they internationalize?
Yeah, a great question and very timely because we've been doing surveys of consumers around Asia, asking them multiple questions, of course. But one question that we've asked is their perception of phones from Chinese brands like Huawei, Oppo, Vivo, and Xiaomi. So we surveyed 4,000 consumers around the region, and there's a very pronounced change in perception for the better in many of these Chinese vendors. For instance, last year, you know, basically we asked the question on, you know, what do they think of these phones? Do you agree that they have either, say, good quality or good design or good features for money and that kind of thing? On the point of good quality, that these phones provide good quality, last year, 29% of the respondents around the region agreed with that statement. This year, or I should, sorry, let me restate that because now it's already 2019. So 2017, 29% said that agreed with that these phones provided good quality. Then 2018, 44% of them agreed that that these phones provided good quality. Similar kind of trend when we asked about good design. 28% in 2017, 35% in 2018. It does vary by country, which is quite fascinating as well too. India has been one of the most favorable or welcoming of these Chinese brands. In fact, the numbers, if you look at India on an individual country basis, are much higher than the ones that I mentioned earlier for the entire region. So consumers in India, as well as Southeast Asia, many of the Southeast Asia countries have been the strongest in terms of welcoming these Chinese brands. Now, perhaps to no surprise, some of the weakest ones were ones that either have a historical or political reason or even just nationalism. Well, basically what I'm getting is Korea, again, because of strength of Samsung, again, the perception of Chinese brands is not as strong there. And then of course in markets like Hong Kong and Taiwan, the perception of Chinese brands isn't as strong either. But otherwise we're looking at a situation where in general, that perception of Chinese brands has been improving over time. And in some of those geos like India and Southeast Asia, they're some of the strongest.
So as we know, for a lot of Chinese phone brands, say like Huawei or even Xiaomi, the US is a big market that they would like to expand into, but very few Chinese brands have had success with it. I think maybe the only one that has some success is OnePlus. And currently with the climate, the current US-China trade war and sort of technology war, do you think that this will adversely impact these Chinese brands' sort of ambitions in the US?
A couple of points. First off, it's actually a bit of a myth that, or misperception, that Chinese phone brands haven't been successful in the US. Actually, ZTE, prior to, of course, the incident that they had last year, they, you know, 1 year ago, they were the number four vendor in the US. Granted, they tended to be more mid to low end phones, tend to be more for prepaid type of subscriptions, that kind of thing. But nonetheless, it is a case where ZTE, Chinese phone brands are actually some of the top vendors in the US market. Obviously, ZTE has had its troubles, but TCL, another Chinese phone brand, is actually now the number four vendor in the US. And if you consider Motorola to be a Chinese brand, now that they're owned by Lenovo, you could argue that they are also in there too, because Moto's always been, they've been holding that number five position in the US. So it's a bit of a myth that Chinese phones can't crack the US market. But having said that, I think to your question, yes, obviously there are vendors like Huawei and Xiaomi and others that would love to go into the US market. They've had difficulty getting into the US market. And actually the biggest issue is really more about the telcos. If you look at a market like the US, it is so heavily operator controlled. Your main distribution, your main means of distribution is through telcos. I mean, to be honest, you look at a lot of these phone brands, they've been able to sell unlocked phones on Amazon for quite a while to the US market, but it's just such a small part of the market because American consumers are accustomed to buying products, buying their phones through a telco. And so the biggest challenge is really how they can work with the telcos. As you pointed out, OnePlus is a good success story, a recent success story of being able to work with T-Mobile. But the other ones haven't quite been as successful yet. Obviously, we're all familiar with, you know, the incident that Huawei had at CES 2 years ago, where they were ready to announce a partnership with AT&T allegedly, but the government intervened. So I think that kind of is where your point was, right? How much then, even if the telcos are the choke point or the bottleneck or the linchpin here, I guess the question is, how much does the political environment then influence that? Was the government the one that jumped in, said, hey, AT&T, you should be working with Huawei, and then did the other telcos get scared? Yeah, obviously, that then creates a bit of a shadow. It doesn't make the picture any easier for a lot of these guys, but it's not to say that it's not possible. Again, to that point about OnePlus, they've been able to work with T-Mobile. They've been relatively successful with it, I think most of these vendors, they're just trying to take it a step at a time. Obviously, they know they can't rush into it, especially if there is going to be a fear of Chinese phones. But it's not to say it's completely blocked off, though.
So what are you on the lookout for at MWC? What's exciting for you?
It's funny. Last year was the year of the notch. This year will be the year of the foldables. I think you'll see a lot of hole punch screens and potentially some slider phones. Obviously, you're going to hear a lot about 5G phones, but, you know, quick point on that is don't expect it to get big right away. I think right now it's everyone just trying to say, look, we've got this trophy product. We're one of the first to have 5G. But again, when the networks aren't quite available yet and network coverage isn't quite as widespread yet, don't expect 5G to be big just yet, even though we'll hear a lot of hype about it next week. And then, of course, the usual AI stuff and so on.
What exactly is a 5G phone? Like, would it look like any other phone? Is it just that it runs on a 5G network? You know, if I were a layman consumer, what exactly is a 5G phone?
Yeah, exactly. It runs on the 5G network, which is faster, could potentially open up interesting applications around, say, live streaming in 4K or in VR. The worry, of course, was that being on a faster network, does this necessarily impact battery life? Does it necessarily impact the physical size of the phone? There are concerns around antennas and whether or not your, you know, your hand might block the signal and that kind of thing. And so there are worries that the phones would be abnormally large. The good thing is when you look at the initial designs that have come out, they've proven that myth wrong, or they've proven those fears incorrect. These are products that look quite similar to existing 4G phones in terms of size and weight and so forth.
So who exactly has released a 5G phone?
Well, Samsung showed one last night, right? And I won't be surprised if we see most of the OEMs announcing stuff in the upcoming week. I mean, OnePlus technically already said back at a Qualcomm conference in Hawaii back in December, they said, yeah, we're going to be one of the first with a 5G phone as well. So I won't be surprised if they start to show something in the upcoming week as well. Basically, expect most of the Android OEMs to have some form of a 5G phone, especially if they're working with Qualcomm, right? Because Qualcomm's basically got the modems, they've got everything ready, they've got reference design. So these guys are already building these products and are ready to showcase them. Apple may still be another year away, especially since they're using Intel modems. But Apple's never had the habit of being first to market with these sorts of things anyway.
Thanks so much, Brian, for coming on. That just about covers our podcast for today.
Thanks
so much, Brian.
Me on.
Thank you. All right. Sure, cool. See ya. Ciao.
Bye.
Okay, so if you would like to look up Brian on Twitter, his Twitter handle is at Brian B Ma. So that's at BryanBMA. Brian is super active on Twitter. If you message him on Twitter, he replies like super quick. He is tweeting all the time. I'm sure he'll be tweeting live at MWC. So if you're interested to know what's happening, do follow him there. Also, if you would like to follow me, my Twitter handle is at Zensu, at ZenSoo. Of course, if you would like to read content by us on MWC, we have Bien Perez, who will be covering MWC live from Spain. Definitely go to scmp.com/tech, where we are publishing content almost daily. This Inside China Tech podcast is on Spotify, iTunes, and Stitcher. So if you enjoy listening to us, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes. And I'll see you next week. Bye!
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.